Greetings to the church at 29th and Webb Road in Wichita, Kansas, from your friend Paul, who stands before you this bright morning to talk with you about the sacred connections in our lives and in the life of our rabbi, Yeshua, whose teaching and life we have discussed many times before. Or so an early house church meeting of one of the Jewish groups that would evolve into the proto-Christians of the first century might have begun. I've been thinking about those sacred connections lately. It started a few weeks ago when I was preaching on the resurrection using Gary Cox's book, Think Again, and then it sort of culminated this week with the funeral of Bob Borison. Connections have been on my mind. My personal connection with Gary Cox and Bob Borison, and the historical connection I have with the life of Jesus. For instance, I didn't know until Bob's funeral this week that he was one of about 1,800 people who witnessed with their own eyes the end of World War II. Bob was serving on the USS Missouri and was on board the day that Emperor Hirohito signed the instrument of surrender that ended the Pacific Theater of Operations for that war. Let's think about that for just a second. Connected directly to the end of the most deadly war in human history, and we said goodbye to that man just this past Tuesday. Bob was connected, as many of us are, to history in profound and important ways. Then at Bob's service, it was remarked that one of his favorite subjects of study and to read in his biographies was Abraham Lincoln. And wouldn't you know that there was a terrific portrait of Lincoln on display down at Interfaith Ministries this past week, where I attended a press conference announcing the awarding of our own Kim Caraway and Debbie Green the Spirit of Faith Humanitarian Award for their work with the Hygiene Pantry. Odd coincidences. Strange connections. The web of my life as it intersects with the webs of your lives. Sacred connections. And then these connections got me thinking about more connections. Just as the early apostles were directly connected to their shared experience of Jesus, Yeshua or Joshua from my earlier example, and they shared this connection with those passionate house churches that had sprung up all over Israel and Palestine in the centuries following the death of their rabbi, the death of their teacher. These people had witnessed firsthand these events, if not firsthand, second or third, and they were just slightly removed. So they felt they had a pretty strong grasp on the story, and they wanted to share that story and its life-changing lessons over and over again. They had seen firsthand what the Jesus movement could affect in someone's life, and they wanted others to know about it. Now, we're not big on proselytizing here at UCC. We're not into that whole, oh man, you gotta come to my church, because, well, we have the only true way to God. So if you don't accept my take on the Jesus movement, well, you're lost forever in your rotten hell. So there's that. Nice knowing you. Have a good day. Okay, not that there's anything particularly wrong. Okay, there's plenty wrong with that, but we're going to take that discussion offline for now. There are numerous congregations in this city and in our state and in our country and in the world that function extremely well using the aforementioned business model. It is very effective. It often scares people into pews. It opens wallets. It's just not us. We are not that kind of church because we are not that kind of people. We don't interpret the Jesus movement in that way. And as you all know by now, interpretation matters. It matters very much. We do not claim to have any secret knowledge or any special truth other than our own individual and shared experiences of the Jesus movement. And so with those house churches that began 2,000 years ago, we share another sacred connection. This is our house, this beautiful building. And we invite others to visit and to be with us as we celebrate life and as we share our lives together, because that is part of our interpretation of the Jesus movement. And if you like it, and if you like the joyful noises that we make, then by all means, you should join us and become part of this moment, of this movement, this ideal, this understanding that the world can and will be a better place. It will be better because each of us, in our own little sphere of influence, can affect change in the world. Who knows what seed of kindness that we plant will grow? And who knows what those seeds will grow into? I officiated at the marriage of a lovely couple here yesterday. It was a beautiful bride, a handsome groom, a big, loving family, and we all made a connection, a sacred connection. I've been working with this couple and have been meeting with them for a number of times as we prepared for this important day in their lives. And one of the recurring themes in our discussions together was this. They wanted to know, how do they stay connected? How does this new couple keep the deep love that they've been feeling for each other, and especially in these exciting days building up to their wedding, how do they keep this deep love alive? How do they stay connected? And we talked about strategies and things that they could do in a practical manner. And personally, I have every confidence that this couple will love each other more deeply each day that they are together. And perhaps that's the key. Shouldn't our connections, those ties that bind that we have in our relationships, shouldn't they be deeper and stronger after each encounter with that person? Jesus would tell us, and did tell us, that caring for others more than for ourselves is one sure way to strengthen those ties. The gospel writer of John, as you've heard with the kids and with the choir, tells us that Jesus said this, "A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." One of my dearest friends that I have known for a long, long time still gets into an argument with me because University Congregational Church does not have a creed. She says to me, "What do you believe in? If you don't profess a creed, what on earth do you stand for?" And for the millionth time, I try to explain to her the difference between a covenantal church and a creedal church. A creedal church requires adherence to a creed, to a specific set of rules, like the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed, all written significantly later than the Gospels or Paul's letters. But church members are expected to accept that creed, to speak the creed out loud, and they agree to live by the principles and the tenets of the creed. If you want to join a Methodist church, for instance, you must stand before the congregation and you must say yes to a series of questions. This is how many, many, many of the churches in the world function, and it's terrific. It works. It's how it should be, a group of like-minded individuals interpreting the Jesus movement in a manner that makes meaning for them. A covenantal church exists because its members adhere to a covenant, a statement of belief or of faith. Ours is very simple, and it's found on the front of your bulletin. In a covenantal church, there is no requirement to profess a creed or to even agree with everything or even anything that the church may stand for. This morning, this may be shocking, this morning, you are probably sitting next to someone with very different views from yours. Not probably, I guarantee it. And this is a great thing, this vast diversity. The connections, the sacred connections to faith and religion from our various past experiences, those connections inform our current connections and the ones that we maintain in this place now. If we come from a faith tradition that connects to the Jesus movement in a creedal or doctrinal way, you would expect those people not to be particularly comfortable with some of the things that are said and have been said from this pulpit. I remember many years ago, I brought another good friend to visit us. We sat up in the balcony. It was a very sultry summer morning. Now, my friend had grown up in a very, very conservative congregation and was not comfortable in a place where questions about faith are not only tolerated, but encouraged. And after the service, my friend looked over at me really troubled and said, "Can you say that from a pulpit?" I kid you not. My friend's connection to the Jesus movement was so controlled and defined by creeds and doctrines that the questions asked from this pulpit and by this congregation were seen as impossible. And I'm willing to bet that almost everyone in this room can share similar stories about their experiences with UCC and people of other faith traditions. Such incredulity existed in our early church. The Jesus movement appeared in the midst of Jews and Gentiles who were occupied by a violent and powerful foreign military, the Romans. They were there. This semester at Phillips Theological Seminary, one of my classes has been a deep study of the social world of early Christianity, and it was the genesis for this morning's sermon. We've been studying first century Roman beliefs and culture and trying to get a handle on how the Jesus movement caught fire in such a profound and world-changing way. I have up here an ancient Roman coin. It actually says right there, ancient Roman. It's a gift from a friend of mine. I taught in a previous life, and a student of mine gave this to me. I really like this coin. It sits on my desk. I enjoy looking at it and imagining the hundreds, if not thousands, of times that this little piece of metal was traded for things, for food, for rent, for drink, for entertainment. I like to imagine the human hands that have connected with this coin through the ages. These hands that were not unlike my hands. And they belonged to humans that were not that different from us. They had to eat and they had to sleep and they wanted a better life for their children and they had to pay taxes and they had to go to work and they had bills. All kinds of money problems and worries. The early church was formed by people not that different from us. They heard the stories of Jesus and they liked what they heard. And so they came together to share in that belief. They formed communities of belief. We call those communities church. Those sacred traditions that started in the beginning stretch through time and space and lead to this place, connecting us to Jesus and his followers in very real ways. I am thankful for this church. I am grateful, profoundly grateful for this pulpit that stands as a beacon of reason and of love. The love to pursue the Jesus movement in ways that make meaning for the people of this congregation. I am thankful for each of you and your questions and your presence in this place. I am grateful for the Jesus movement. And I am proud to be learning how to become a credible spokesman for the movement. Amen. If you are able, please stand and we will sing our benediction song. You have 7 days to go forth and make a difference in the world. Strengthen your connections. Love one another as we have been loved. Amen.